From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. The songs of Burt Bacharach and Hal David are being revived in movies, TV commercials, tribute albums, and reissues. We gave you just an excerpt of our interview with lyricist Hal David last month. On today's archive edition of Fresh Air, we broadcast an expanded version. You probably know many of his songs by heart. Songs like The Look of Love, I Say a Little Prayer, What the World Needs Now, Do You Know the Way to San Jose, and I'll Never Fall in Love Again. And rock critic Ken Tucker reviews Paul Simon's new CD of songs from his upcoming Broadway musical, The Cape Man. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The songs of Burt Bacharach and my guest Hal David are showing up everywhere, in movies like My Best Friend's Wedding, First Wives Club, and Austin Powers, in TV commercials, in reissues, and on tribute records by jazz, rock, and avant-garde musicians. You probably know lots of Hal David's lyrics by heart, lyrics to songs such as The Look of Love, What the World Needs Now, You'll Never Get to Heaven, Close to You, Do You Know the Way to San Jose, I'll Never Fall in Love Again, I Say a Little Prayer, Walk on By, This Guy's in Love with You, and What's New Pussycat? Last month, we featured an excerpt of our interview with lyricist Hal David. Today, on our archive edition, we have an expanded version. Bacharach and David's collaboration lasted from the late 50s to the mid-70s. The leading interpreter of their music is Dionne Warwick. Let's listen to her first recording of a Bacharach and David song.
Take me over. Now that I do anything for you, don't make me over. Now that you know how I adore you, don't pick on the things I say, the things I do. Just love me with all my faults. The way that I love you, I'm begging you, don't make me over.
Hal David, welcome to Fresh Air. Tell me the story of how you first met Dionne Warwick.
Dionne Warwick was a background singer with her mother and various relatives on recording sessions in New York, the Drifters, and so on and so forth. And she had come over to us to ask if us being Burt Bacharach and myself, to ask if she could do some demonstration records for us. And we invited her to our office in New York City, and she did come up, and she sang for us, and she just blew us away, and we thought we should record her.
Did you feel like you were often writing for her voice, and if so, what did that bring out in your lyrics?
Well, there just seemed to be a special chemistry that we found among the three of us, Burt, Dionne, and myself. And it seemed that whatever I wrote, she could sing and sing beautifully. And after a time, I began to hear her voice in my ears. So when I wrote a lyric, I knew instinctively what words sounded best with her, what words and what notes sounded right. It just happened instinctively, automatically.
Did she surprise you with any of her line readings of your lyrics? Did you hear any of your lyrics in a different way after hearing her performance?
I don't think so. I think she came closer than anyone I know to singing my lyrics the way I meant them to be sung. That's a rare occurrence. I think if you ask many lyric writers, you'll find they're often unhappy with the way some of their songs are sung.
Now, you met Burt Bacharach when you were both writing for the publishing company Famous Music. How did you meet each other there?
Well, we were both associated with Famous Music, which was the publishing arm of Paramount. We had offices, if not next to each other, very close to each other, and consequently we knew each other. I think in those days everybody knew each other in the business in New York. And we were friendly, and people tended to write with different collaborators, trying to find that magic combination. So a time came when Bert and I thought we would try a few songs together, and we did. And very soon, almost from the beginning, we started to succeed together.
Do you think that you and Bert Bacharach consciously or unconsciously did things together that were different from typical song form of the time?
I would say unconsciously, yes, we did. We broke through the normal 32-bar pattern, the normal AA bridge A, I guess AABA or ABAC, which most of the great songs and great composers and lyricists wrote in that form. And we started to go into different forms, but it just seemed to happen. Whatever we wrote in a way that seemed natural to us, and very often being natural didn't fall into that pattern of the past.
Burt Bacharach often wrote in tricky time signatures and in changing time signatures. For instance, in the song Promises, Promises, I guess it's in the bridge, in the part Promises, Their Kind of Promises Can Just Destroy Your Life. Every measure, the time signature changes. It goes from 3/4 to 4/4 to 6/4 to 3/4 to 4/4 to 6/4 again. Did that affect your writing? I mean, do you have to keep this in mind when you're writing the lyrics?
It never occurred to me that we were changing time signatures when I was writing a lyric to Bert's music. Nor did it occur to me when I was writing lyrics first that led to that kind of change in time signatures. Everything always seemed natural. So I never had a problem in listening to the music because I didn't hear the time signatures changing. And Bert wrote, you know, he would have to speak for himself, but essentially that's the way he wrote. That's the way he thought. I don't think he thought in terms of changing time signatures. It just came out that way.
So did you have all these, like, triplet kind of notes and decide that that would be one word, promises, 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 as opposed to, like, come to me, or, you know, three one-syllable words?
No, I guess I heard it. Well, we knew the title was going to be Promises, Promises.
Oh, so you knew that already. Okay,
yeah,
right. Because it's the title from the show.
That was the title of the show, and Bert wrote the melody that way, Promises, Promises. And then I wrote the rest of the lyrics to the music. Another song we wrote for that show, I'll Never Fall in Love Again, which again has some time signature changes in it. It was a song we wrote in Boston. It was the night before we closed in Boston on our way to Washington, D.C. with Promises, Promises. And Bert had just come out of the hospital. He'd been very sick with pneumonia, and he'd come out of the hospital, and we needed a new song. And I wrote the lyric for that. I'll Never Fall in Love Again. And I gave it to Bert, and he sat down at the piano in his room and wrote the music to that.
And that's where there's that line about pneumonia in it.
Yeah, but I must say, it probably is the reason for the line about pneumonia, but it didn't occur to me that I was doing it. I did it unconsciously.
Yeah, and you rhymed it with phonia. He'll never phonia.
Yeah.
Well, what would you rather hear, Promises, Promises, or I'll Never Fall in Love Again? I'm going to let you choose.
I'll Never Fall in Love Again.
Let's hear it. This is Dionne Warwick. Lyricist Hal David is my guest, and right now we're talking about his long collaboration with Burt Bacharach. Do You Know the Way to San Jose? A song that has a really interesting lyric to it, and although it's the melody is kind of cheerful, the lyric is really about failing and wanting to go back home because things weren't working out. Tell me about writing this lyric.
Well, you know, the idea of doing a lyric that is essentially kind of sad to a very up and optimistic melody is something I've done a lot, and I've always thought it was an effective way of writing a song. Bert played this melody for me, and music says things to me and should say things to me. I heard the phrase, "Do you know the way to San Jose?" And from that, I began to create the storyline that became the person who comes to Los Angeles to make his or her career in the entertainment business and has dreams of being a big star. And for most people, it does not turn out to be quite that happy.
Well, here's Dionne Warwick again singing your lyric to Do You Know the Way to San Jose?
Do you know the way to San Jose? I've been away so long, I may go wrong and lose my way. Do you know the way to San Jose? I'm going back to find some peace of mind in San Jose. LA is a great big freeway. Put $100 down and buy a car. In a week, maybe two, they'll make you a star. Weeks turn into years, how quick they pass. And all the stars that never were are parking cars and pumping gas. You can.
We'll talk more with lyricist Hal David after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is lyricist Hal David, and right now we're talking about his long collaboration with Burt Bacharach. One of your songs that I really love is The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. I'm a real sucker for these big Western themes. I've always really loved this, you know, big Gene Pitney vocal. The song was not used in the movie The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. It was just inspired by the film. Why did you decide to write a lyric inspired by the story of the movie?
Well, we were asked to write it for Paramount. There was a movie called The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, a John Ford movie.
Great movie.
Great movie. They were called exploitation songs in those days. And the film companies had you do those songs to have a song come out and perhaps become a hit and exploit the film every time the title song was played, people would hear the title and think of the film. And we were asked to do that by Paramount. The song turned out to be a rather good song, and the Paramount Publishing Company and we made every effort to try to get the song into the film. John Ford resisted it, because he didn't conceive of a song being in the film at that point. As much as Paramount pressed them to put it in, they were not successful, and we were not successful. So the song came out. Gene Pitney recorded it, did a very good record, and became a big hit. And I suspect Mr. Ford might have been a little regretful that he didn't have it in the film.
Okay, one of the lines that I really like in the lyric, you know, because the point of a gun was the only law that liberty understood when it came to shooting straight and fast. he was mighty good. It's such a different style than like your sophisticated love songs. tell me about finding the language for this, you know, Western anthem.
Well, let's see. How did I do that? You know, over the years, I found myself writing hit songs that became big country hits, and I had never been I had never been down south in the country to now. I have since, but to Nashville. I don't know. I seem to hear those things, and I find it kind of natural for me to do. I've never had a problem writing Western songs, country songs. You know, most of the work we do as songwriters or any kind of creative person is really done in the imagination. And you can do almost anything that you can imagine. And I guess I imagine things like The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Well, here's Gene Pitney to sing The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, music by Burt Bacharach, lyric by my guest, Hal David.
When Liberty Valance rode to town, the women folk would hide, they'd hide. When Liberty Valance walked around, the men would step aside. Because the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When it came to shooting straight and fast, he was mighty good. From out of the east, a stranger came, a law book in his hand. Oh, man, the kind of a man the West would need to tame a troubled land. 'Cause the point of a gun was the only law that Liberty understood. When it came to shooting straight and fast, he was mighty good. Many a man would face his gun, and many a man would fall. The man who shot Liberty Valance, he shot Liberty Valance. He was the bravest of them all.
That's Gene Pitney singing The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance with a lyric by my guest, Hal David. You and Burt Bacharach had such a great deal of success together. Tell me why you ended up breaking up.
Well, breaking up is sort of a very strong view of what happened. We had been writing together forever, it seemed. We began to have divergent interests. We had a contract with the Warner Brothers to make records for Dion. There wasn't always time to make those records. Dion was kind of upset about that. And suddenly we found ourselves going in different directions. And that's exactly what we did. We just went in different directions. We never broke up in the sense that we got angry with each other. We were mad at each other. We didn't talk to each other. There may have been a time where it was somewhat a little touchy among the three of us. But we really always remained friends. And today, and as for many, many years, we are very close and firm friends.
Burt Bacharach was considered the sex symbol, and he, you know, had the celebrity marriage to Angie Dickinson for a while. He was always, and still is really, the more famous one. How do you feel about that?
Well, he's a performer.
Right, that's true.
And a very good performer, and he's much more visible than I am, and that's the way it is. Our songs are collaborations between the two of us. And my wife thinks I'm a sex symbol.
Did you want more fame? Did you want?
Well, everybody wants a certain amount of, you know, they say you're never too thin, you're never too rich, and I guess you're never too famous. But I am very grateful for the career I've had and have.
I want to hear a little bit about your background. I know that your parents were from Eastern Europe, I believe.
Eastern Europe from Austria.
And your father opened up a deli in what, Brooklyn or Manhattan?
In Brooklyn, a delicatessen and restaurant.
Mm-hmm. And you and the family lived upstairs from the deli. What was the best part and worst part about living upstairs from your parents' deli?
Well, the best part of living upstairs, it was easy to go home from the store. And we did tend to have our meals upstairs rather than in the store as a family. And the store in our home was about 2 to 3 streets away from our elementary school, where the four of us, we were four children, three brothers and one sister, all went to the same grade school, all went to the same high school. And everyone knew us. It was kind of a lower middle class area, lower middle class maybe to poor. But it was kind of a very nice and friendly atmosphere to grow up in.
And what was the worst part, living above the deli?
I don't remember. Well, I think it was a cold water flat. So we had sort of a stove in the kitchen, and we had a stove of some sort. It would be like a Franklin stove, but I'm sure it wasn't. To heat the sitting room. So it was that. We lived in what was called a railroad flat, and you went from one room to the other, rather than through foyers. There was probably a lack of privacy, but I don't remember that too well.
Lyricist Hal David. Our interview will continue in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations, and by Barnes & Noble, booksellers since 1873, and Rising Tide Entertainment, featuring the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band's new release, The Christmas Album, available at record stores nationwide. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, more with lyricist Hal David, and Ken Tucker reviews Paul Simon's new CD of songs from his forthcoming Broadway musical, The Cape Man.
The moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. Oh, I'll comb in my hair now, and wondering what dress to wear now. I say a little prayer for you. Work, I just take time, and all through my coffee break time, I say a little prayer for you.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our interview with lyricist Hal David. This is an extended version of an interview we excerpted last month. Hal David collaborated with Burt Bacharach from the late 50s through the mid-70s. Their songs include I'll Never Fall in Love Again, The Look of Love, What the World Needs Now, Close to You, Alfie, I Say a Little Prayer, Walk on By, and You'll Never Get to Heaven. Do you think that you paid a lot of attention to lyrics when you were a kid listening to music?
Well, my oldest brother, Mac David, was a songwriter.
I'm going to stop you right there and name some of the songs that he wrote the lyrics to. He wrote the lyrics to Blue and Sentimental, Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White, Lily Marlene, is that right?
Correct.
It Must Be Him, that Vicky Carr hit. Let it please be him. It must be him. I'm just a lucky so-and-so. And the lyrics for the TV theme, 77 Sunset Strip, Hawaiian Eye, and Surfside 6.
And Candy. And I don't care if the sun don't shine.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. So he was, what, your older brother?
My oldest brother. I had two older brothers.
So when did you start thinking that you wanted to do that too?
Well, I don't know. It seems to me always, I was always interested in writing more lyrics than music. We all studied music. We all played the violin. When I say all, the three brothers. I had a little band. I don't recall if my brothers did or not, but I had a band that used to play for weddings and bar mitzvahs and things of that nature in Brooklyn. And used to work in the Boar Circuit in the Catskill Mountains during summers, and finally got a job writing advertising copy for the New York Post, which is where I thought I was going to wind up being a newspaper person.
I think when you were in the Army, you ended up writing songs for the USO?
No, not the USO, the Central Pacific Entertainment Section, which was an Army special service unit, which was based in Hawaii, in Honolulu, at the University of Hawaii in Honolulu.
So you basically had a showbiz job in the Army?
Oh, that's what I did.
That's great.
I was very, very lucky. Yeah. I think the Army was very lucky to have me away from guns, too. And that's what I did for about 3 years. I worked writing shows, musical shows, songs, sketches, and it changed my life because when I came out of that, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
So did you have to write, like, morale-boosting kind of songs?
No, not really. We were writing entertainment for Army camps all over the Central and South Pacific.
So remember any of the lyrics that you wrote for the Army?
Well, my famous lyric, the one I'm most proud of, and it was a hit in the Pacific, though I'm sure it's not known by your audience. It was called "Send the Salami to Your Boy in the Army." It's the patriotic thing that everyone should do. Send the salami to your boy in the Army. Don't just send him things to wear. Send him something he can chew.
This is written by the son of a deli man.
It's written by the son of a deli man, and it was a hit. And I remember being with my wife at some function, and somebody came over to our table and said, "Did you write 'Send the Salami to Your Boy in the Army'?" Because he had been in the Pacific, and I said, I had, and he just wanted to shake my hand.
So it really was well-known during the war?
Well-known in the Pacific.
Your first real big break as a lyricist was writing material for Sammy Kay, and then Sammy Kay was one of the first people to record one of your songs. Your, I think, second hit was Magic Moments, which Perry Como recorded. So it just seems to me, you know, you started out writing material for one generation, the Sammy Kay, Perry Como, like middle-of-the-road performers, and you ended up writing material that became, like, really famous with the rock and roll generation, songs recorded by the Drifters and Gene Pitney and Dusty Springfield and Dionne Warwick and Aretha Franklin, Jackie DeShannon, and Jerry Butler. So what was that switch like for you to go from, you know, one type of performer to another, from one generation to another?
It never occurred to me that, with Sammy Kay, I had a song called The Four Winds and the Seven Seas that became my first hit. But then I had many songs. I mean, I had a song called American Beauty Rose, which was a hit for Frank Sinatra. Bell Bottom Blues, which was a number one song for Teresa Brewer. Broken Hearted Melody, which was a hit for Sarah Vaughan. So it was an ongoing thing. They were the stars of that period, and by the time Bert and I were together, we were writing for the stars of our period. And later on, I wrote to All the Girls I've Loved Before, which was for Julio Iglesias, which became a star of another period. It just, I'd like to think I keep growing mentally and creatively all the time. I am very much interested in everything that goes on today, and I hope tomorrow as well.
There's a song of yours called My Little Red Book, And the only version I know of it is by the band Love. And it's a great, you know, kind of like pre-punk rock version of it. And I don't know the original version, which I believe was written for the movie What's New Pussycat.
That's correct.
What was your reaction to hearing this Love recording of My Little Red Book?
Well, I liked it. I happen to like that song.
It's a very good song.
It's probably the most rock and roll song that Burt Bacharach and I ever wrote.
Did you see it as a rock and roll song when you wrote it?
Yeah, because we wrote it for a rock and roll group in the picture. It was Eric Burdon, I think, and the Animals.
Oh, they performed it in the movie.
Yeah.
You can see I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah. It's a fun movie, Woody Allen, fun movie. And I remember recording that song in London, and you know, it was a kick. You mentioned earlier about writing in the rock and roll milieu of our period, but if you listen to our songs, even though we wrote in that period, and we wrote in what I think is very contemporary style. The songs really weren't rock and roll.
Mm-hmm. The songs themselves.
Yeah. They were just very individual, and I think that's one of the things that helped make them popular. But Little Red Book was a real rock and roll song, and I always had a lot of fun with it.
Let's hear the Love recording of it.
Well, I just got out my little red book the minute that you said goodbye.
Music by Burt Bacharach, lyric by my guest Hal David. The group is Love. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is lyricist Hal David. He wrote many of his best-known songs with composer Burt Bacharach. You and Burt Bacharach have each said that Alfie is your favorite song, or at least right on top there. Why is Alfie your favorite?
Well, in writing songs, we're always trying to be as good as we can be, try to be at our very best. We're not always at our very best. I think that's an impossibility for anyone. And then there are time constraints when there are recording sessions to go into, films where the song has got to be produced in a given amount of time, and a theater piece where it's got to go in very quickly. So consequently, you let go of songs sometimes before it's every bit as good as you hoped it would be. I think with Alfie, in my case at least, that song came as close to being the way I wanted that a song to be.
Now, in the bridge, there's it doesn't really rhyme. You know, as sure as I believe there's a heaven above, Alfie, I know there's something much more, something even non-believers can believe in. Tell me about doing that without a rhyme.
Well, now that you asked the question, I hadn't even thought of it, and I don't think I even thought that it didn't have a rhyme. You bring it to my attention. That's just exactly how I heard the lyric going. I wrote that lyric for the most part first, and Bert wrote the music afterwards. He wrote a brilliant melody. I just heard those lines, and the structure of the lines was the way I thought it should fall in the bridge of the song, and I now know I didn't have a rhyme in the bridge, and that's interesting for me.
You know, you said in a 1973 interview, you said, "One thing I never do is think in terms of rhymes. I'm not a rhymester, a technical virtuoso like Lorenz Hart or Cole Porter. If I do use a rhyme, it's like paste, only to keep a line from falling off a cliff."
Yeah. Well, that's true. Perhaps that's why I didn't notice I didn't use a rhyme in the bridge of Alfie, because there was no need in my ear and my mind to get something to hold the bridge together. It seemed to hold itself together. Very often in a lyric to a melody, it can go on and ramble on and lose a sense of structure, and you need a rhyme to sort of hold it together, or else it sort of feels like it's going to fall off a cliff. It's the only way I can picture it.
If I were a lyricist, this is an assignment I don't think I would have wanted. Write a title theme for a movie called Alfie about a womanizer who, you know, really mistreats the women in his life. Mm-hmm. Seems like a tough assignment. You did good. What did you think when you got this assignment?
I thought to myself, my God, why do they keep giving me these terrible assignments? It seems such an odd phrase, Alfie. It was not a name that spelled any sort of romance whatsoever. It sounded almost like a music hall, a British music hall kind of song. And it took me a while to find my way into the song, which was the opening line. What's it all about? And suddenly I had a sense of where I should go.
Well, let's bring back Dionne Warwick again. And this is Alfie, with music by Burt Bacharach, lyric by my guest, Hal David.
What's it all about, Alfie? Is it just for the moment we live? What's it all about when you sort it out, Alfie? Are we meant to take more than we give? Or are we meant to be kind? And if only fools are kind, then I guess it is wise to be cruel. And if life belongs only to the strong, Alfie, what will you lend on an old golden rule? As sure as I believe, there's a
Lyricist Hal David is my guest. Do you sing?
Yes, I do. I didn't used to sing. We all sing, but I didn't used to sing out loud in front of people. But in the last few years, my wife has convinced me that I should sing out loud in front of people. That goes in nightclubs and in home and for benefits. And the more I do it, the more I like it. I like to think that the more I do it, the better I do it. And I now have fun doing it.
Do you accompany yourself?
No, I don't. I always have a very good pianist or a rhythm section work with me.
I would like to give you the chance to choose the music that we're going to close with. since I've been kind of hogging all the choosing during the program. Do you have a song that you'd particularly like to have us play? One of your favorites?
Yes, I would. I'm sitting here right next to my wife, Eunice, who's listening to this interview, and I know the song that she loves so much is To All the Girls I've Loved Before with Julio and Willie, so that's the one I choose.
And maybe Eunice would like to say what she loves about the song?
Let's put her on. She's going to come right over here to my microphone and do that.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
First of all, I think what I like about that song is the rhythm and the happiness of it. I've never looked at it as a sexist song. I know some women have objected to it. But I think it's just got great verve and energy to it. And I love the fact that the two men who are singing it, Julio and Willie, are so different, and yet they go together so well in that duet. I just think it's a super song.
Well, I hope when you hear it, you don't think of your husband thinking of all the girls he's ever loved.
Yes, but that's in the past, don't forget.
True, all right.
Bye.
Well, bye. Thank you for telling us why you love the song. And Hal David?
Yes.
Are you back with us?
I want to
say thank you so much for sharing some of the stories behind the songs and some of the stories of your life. It's been a complete pleasure. Thank you for giving us so many great songs. That's what I really want to thank you for.
Thank you, Terry.
To all the girls I've loved before, who traveled in and out my door, I'm glad they came along. I dedicate this song to all the girls I've loved before. To all the girls I once caressed, and may I say I felt the best for helping me to grow. I owe a lot, I know, to all the girls I've loved before. The winds of change are always blowing, and every time I try to stay, the winds of change continue blowing, and they just carry me away. To all the girls who share my life.
Willie Nelson and Julio Iglesias. We heard from lyricist Hal David, who's also the former president of ASCAP, the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers. Coming up, Paul Simon's new recording of songs from his forthcoming Broadway musical, The Cape Man. This is Fresh Air. Paul Simon has created his first Broadway musical. Set to open January 8th, it's called The Cape Man, a collaboration with Nobel Prize-winning poet Derek Walcott, directed by choreographer Mark Morris. Simon has written 38 songs for the production and has recorded 13 of them for his new album, his first in 6 years. It's called Songs from the Cape Man. Rock critic Ken Tucker has a review.
It was the morning of October 6, 1960. I was wearing my brown suit, preparing to leave the House of Dear. Shook some hands, then adios, Brooklyn amigos.
Maybe somebody might hold. The story Paul Simon tells in The Cape Man is rooted in truth. In 1959, a teenager named Salvador Agron put a knife into two innocent young men in New York. His excuse was that he believed they were members of a rival gang. Agron himself was a member of the Vampires, a Puerto Rican gang, and was known for wearing a black silk cape, thus his nickname, the Cape Man. Convicted of murder, Agron spent most of his life in jail. He was paroled in 1979 and died of a heart attack at the age of just 42. Paul Simon, working with Derek Walcott, tells Agron's story with no small sympathy for the Cape Man, who apparently showed great talent as a writer, repented of his crime, and sought to go to college. Simon tells his story with an old-fashioned straightforwardness that's unusual in the post-Stephen Sondheim musical theater.
Killer wants to go to college. He wants to get his parole. So the Department of Corrections will release him in the fall. Killer wants to go on TV. To talk about his book, make my life into a movie. I got the style, I got the look. This boy used to be on death row. Will his violence return? Will he call out to his mother? Mama, you can watch me burn. Killer wants to go to college.
On Broadway, Simon himself will not perform. His music will be sung by a cast that includes Ruben Blades and Mark Anthony, who is probably the most popular Latin dance music vocalist right now. Here are Blades and Anthony duetting on Time is an Ocean.
I speak to you in Jesus' name, as Jesus speaks through. I have walked through the valley of death row to the shore. I have stumbled through silvery water to my Savior, my Salvador.
It took me 4 years to learn. I was in prison, not in church, and two more to begin the book of my soul search.
Time is an ocean of endless tears.
Throughout The Cape Man, Simon's most formally successful music is the material that combines 50s doo-wop with Puerto Rican pop music rhythms. As was true of Simon's two previous recordings, Graceland and Rhythm of the Saints, he transcends cultural carpetbagging when he invests it with his own heart and soul in moments like this.
Oh, 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 I got time on my hands tonight. You're the girl of my dreams. When I'm near you, my future seems bright. Ooh, I want you to be my girl. I want you to be my movie. I am Salminio, and I need you so, sweet bird of death. Got style from your hair to your heels.
Listening to this CD makes you want to see the show, to hear how successfully Simon will pull off a theatrical conceit like the one built into Can I Forgive Him? It's a song written from the contrasting points of view of the mothers of Agron and one of his victims. When Simon sings both women's parts here, the result is flat, as are a couple of other cuts whose characters can't be brought to life by Simon's compulsively low-key manner. They weaken the record, but for all I know, they might prove showstoppers when performed on Broadway. What I do know is that no theatergoer who grew up on Simon and Garfunkel is going to be able to resist classic Paul Simon pop like this meditative road song, Trailways Bus.
A passenger traveling quietly conceals himself with a magazine and a sleepless pillow. Over the crest of the mountain, the moon begins its climb.
And he wakes to find he's enrolled in farmland. The farmer sleeps against his wife. He wonders what their life must be. A trailways bus is heading south into Washington, D.C.
The Cape Man is by no means a Broadway sure thing. A tale of redemption and alienation, it sides with a killer, something the aging matinee crowd may disapprove of. And while its use of ethnic musics may put off the suburban audience that subsidizes the Great White Way, ethnic audiences, some still smarting from what they perceive as the Puerto Rican insult of West Side Story a quarter century ago, may disdain Simon's experiment. As a piece of popular art, The Cape Man will succeed only if everyone who sees it feels its passion as sharply as a knife in the ribs.
Ken Tucker is critic at large for Entertainment Weekly. He reviewed Paul Simon's new CD, Songs from the Cape Man. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, and Naomi Person, with Alan Tu, Monique Nazareth, and Tracy Tenenbaum. Research assistance from Sarah Scher. Our theme music was composed by Joel Forrester and performed by the Microscopic Septet. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
It's got quality. Come on, baby, now don't be shy. Step in the light so I can see. Quality.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Remy Martin, Cognac, France, since 1724. Information available, 800-678-REMY. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, for World AIDS Day, we talk about the latest developments in the epidemic with Dr. Jonathan Mann, co-editor of the Global Report, AIDS in the World, founding director of the World Health Organization's Global AIDS Program, and an organizer of the first World AIDS Day. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.